Hey, I'm Joshua Briscoe, host of Almost Entirely Sports on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 99.3 FM. Every weekday from 4 to 6, we talk about everything that we find interesting, from how Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce can revitalize the Chiefs' offense if Alex Smith will use them correctly, to how on earth Jerry Jones spent $16 million on a Hall of Fame party. Tune in to Almost Entirely Sports from 4 to 6 p.m. weekdays on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 99.3 FM and 1510.com.
What happened last night? This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Good morning.
The Royals are 500. Tyreek Hill's really good. Goodbye. I don't need the rest of these 3 hours. That was it. That's the whole show. The whole show today. The Royals are 500. I told you so. Tyreek Hill's going to change his offense. I told you so. Pat Mahomes is the number two quarterback now, by the way. I told you so. What else do you need from me? Bye, Mom. Oh, God. I'm so excited for today's show. There's so much good stuff to talk about. Even though some of it is 500. The Chiefs had a preseason game on Friday. I already got to talk about it once because I got to do post-game, which was fantastic. Oh, God. The ESPN is also replaying Bryce Harper's injury from last night over and over again, and it is terrible. All right. Everything's great again. I looked away. The Chiefs played a preseason game on Friday. It was fantastic. The first team offense looked as good as a first-team offense can look. The things that didn't go very well, I'm not that concerned about. Pat Mahomes, starting about, I don't know, 15 minutes ago, was getting second-team reps in camp. Pat Mahomes is the backup now. You can take down your Pro Football Talk story about him being third on the depth chart now. And the Royals are 500, which I've been saying since spring training. I mean, this is a perfect setup. Let's start with the Chiefs because it's more exciting and it's more interesting. The preseason game last night, the Chiefs lose 27-17, which should be the last thing you care about, but the first thing that you read because it's just the top of the screen all the time. But Alex Smith in the offense comes in and looks superb. Everything is perfect. Alex Smith gets a one-on-one look with Tyreek Hill down to his right, streaking down the sideline for a 37-yard gain. The ball flew 35 to 40 yards in the air out of Smith's hand. It was a really good throw. The next play, then there's like the little screen to Hill and the screen to Anthony Sherman, which is sort of how it works usually, you know. Get the big play and then a couple of screens. But Alex Smith then scrambles for a first down. Eventually in the red zone, Spencer Ware converts a first down, punches it in later on. And then the first team offense was done for the night. If you missed it, that's what you missed from the first team offense. That was their entire deal. And it was great. If there's anything that's going to give me a little more hope, a little more optimism with this Chiefs offense, with Alex Smith specifically, maybe you can sell me on the Alex Smith Tyreek Hill connection, on that chemistry. Maybe you can sell me on them actually being on the same page. Because I know that veteran quarterback Alex Smith and rookie wide receiver Tyreek Hill were not always on the same page. I know they threw a lot of passes. I know Alex threw a lot of passes to Tyreek Hill in practices through last year. But this whole offseason, we've seen it at training camp, the Chiefs have made no bones about it. A huge focus point of this offense has been spent on getting Alex Smith and Tyreek Hill on the same page. If you see Tyreek Hill in a one-on-one matchup, and Alex Smith did this, and then later on, Patrick Mahomes did this on his deep shot to Chris Conley. Maybe it was Brady Conley. I think it was Brady Conley. Can't remember who Mahomes threw it to. Can't check the stats because it was called back on a penalty. Might have been Marcus Kemp or Shontavious Jones. I don't know. I know too many depth chart receivers. Kemp got the touchdown, I know. Also, apparently Kemp is running with the second team today, which is interesting. I digress. It doesn't really matter. Smith, Bray, and Mahomes all did something really, really well. But on their first play, all of them. And we'll talk. I promise we're going to talk about Mahomes coming up soon. But the first team offense, as much as I love Patrick Mahomes, and as excited as I am for the future of this team, the most important thing right now is the first team offense. And it's also exciting to talk about the first team offense right now because the first team offense was really, really good. It looked good. They're going up against a terrible defense and a terrible team, but they looked really good. But something that Smith and Bray and Mahomes all did really well, unfortunately, Joel Stave did not get the coverage to do this. They all had their first read, the guy going streaking on the sidelines to their right. They all had that guy one-on-one running in a straight line. And so they all looked off the safety. They looked the other way. Just made that safety hesitate. Then looked back. Fired. Beautiful. The Chiefs offense can work that way. And if you are in Alex Smith's shoes, if you are quarterbacking this offense and you ever see Tyreek Hill lined up that way, if Tyreek Hill is ever one-on-one, you should be taking the snap, taking your three steps, and then putting the ball wherever you think he's going to wind up, because he's going to be there, and whenever he gets there, he's going to be alone. That's just how Tyreek Hill works. I had somebody on Twitter ask me for clarification, the statement that I've been making, that Tyreek Hill will revitalize this offense if Alex Smith will use him correctly. The clarification there, what I mean is, Tyreek Hill will be a star, and this offense will be a top 10 offense if Alex Smith uses Tyreek Hill like DeSean Jackson and not like Wes Welker. And so I have my doubts that that's something that Alex Smith is capable of. I'm not supremely confident in it being executed. I have a little bit of hope because they've been doing it in training camp. I have a little bit more hope because they've been doing it. They did it on that first play in the preseason. I have some hope there. I'm not totally bought in yet because of what we saw in the preseason. Not because of the preseason, but because this is how it works. As we saw in the preseason, I should say, a deep shot to Tyreek Hill was immediately followed up by a couple of screens that didn't go anywhere. So my reservations are there. That is where I am hesitant. I'm hesitant because we saw some of those deep shots last year. Remember? In fact, I think we probably saw it in week one, first offensive play. We saw it a handful of times. We saw a handful of instances in which the first play of the game offensively for the Chiefs was to take a deep shot down the field. And then it would often be followed up by a bunch of screens and some runs that didn't go anywhere. And the Chiefs had those on Friday. I mean, the Chiefs had 31 rushing yards on Friday, and 10 of those were from Alex Smith's lone scramble. Chiefs running backs ran for 21 yards on Friday, which is not great, understandably. Especially because I've been on that train telling you that the Chiefs have exceptional running back depth. They don't have exceptional offensive line depth, to be sure. But I think they've got good enough running back depth that I would think that against every version of the Niners, first team, second team, third team, I would think that they would be able to pick up, I don't know, more than 24 yards. But they didn't. And there are some concerns to be had there. In fact, I saw some reports from training camp today. Things are already interesting in training camp today. Because apparently C.J. Spiller has gotten a little bit of first team run today. He took the second kickoff on Friday, so he might have a chance to get some reps down there. D'Anthony Thomas had the opening kickoff. I think D'Anthony Thomas is going to make this team, and I think he's going to return kickoffs again this year. But just from training camp today, Patrick Mahomes was the second quarterback out of the gate. He got the second team reps after Alex Smith did. Marcus Kemp started getting second team reps, according to Matt Derrick, with Patrick Mahomes. C.J. Spiller got some run with the ones after getting run with the in the fourth quarter on Friday. And Terrence Mitchell and Steven Nelson are both still out. And D.J. White was getting some run with the ones. Also, Travis Kelce, Benny Logan, Chris Jones, Eric Berry, Parker Anger, none of those guys played on Friday night. Today, Travis Kelce returned to practice. Chris Jones returned to practice off of the PUP list, which is fantastic news. And Benny Logan returned. And I'm most excited about Chris Jones there. I had some concern about Benny Logan, even though none of the reports were that it was very serious. Just because when big guys get hurt, they tend to stay hurt longer than your wide receivers. But Chris Jones being back is so exciting. If he is healthy this year, he's going to be a star. He's going to have a Pro Bowl season, which is hard to do as a defensive end in a 3-4. So maybe that's a little bit, over the top, perhaps. But Chris Jones, as a healthy football player, is going to be, in a second season, even more dominant than he was in his first. And that's going to make this defensive line so good. And this is one reason also, the defensive line didn't look very good, especially in the depth positions on Friday. And I'm just not that worried about it. Because Benny Logan and Chris Jones, two-thirds of your starting defensive line were not there. The other third of your starting defensive line, Alan Bailey, was amazing in his moments. He consumed a human being. I don't know what else you could possibly want to see from him. Whenever you have Bailey, Logan, Jones across that defensive line, it is going to be a treat to watch, which is going to be a treat for Chiefs fans considering what we dealt with last year, which was not exactly a treat in run defense. I took a lot of good things away from that preseason game, as many as you can. And I want to keep buying into the offense. I want to keep believing that it's going to take that next step. And you saw everything you could have asked for. There aren't many things that you could have been holding out for on Friday, other than maybe some running game success, which I understand that that was very, very absent. But my takeaways from the game in general, from the I told you so division, deep shots to Tyreek Hill are going to change everything for this offense. If they get called consistently enough, if Alex Smith doesn't get afraid of them, if they keep going back to them even whenever they don't work. Because if you throw on target deep shots to Tyreek Hill, they're either going to be completions or pass interference calls 75% of the time. He gets separation in a truly, like, incredible way. The other thing is that Spencer Ware looked pretty good in the very limited work that he got and the very limited success the running game had. Spencer Ware was a part of it. The guy that we saw before his injury last year is the true Spencer Ware. Spencer Ware pre-injury was a totally different player than who he was post-injury. He got 18 of the snaps with the first team, by the way. Kareem Hunt got one. There were 19 snaps with the first team. So that leads me to the point that I've also been hanging on from since the draft. It's Spencer Ware, and then it's Kareem Hunt, and then it's C.J. Spiller fighting with Tre'Kendrick West for that third spot. I don't think they're going to keep four guys because they're also probably certainly keeping Anthony Sherman. I don't totally understand that. I don't see him in the running game enough, and I certainly didn't see him bringing any success in the running game last year to justify keeping him. And whenever they're throwing passes to Anthony Sherman, I would almost always rather that just be C.J. Spiller or Tre'Kendrick West or Kareem Hunt or Spencer Ware or an actual wide receiver. I don't think Anthony Sherman's exactly special with the ball in his hands, and the running game hasn't been good enough for me to think that his fullback play in a traditional sense is any sort of worthwhile. But I digress. He's going to be the reason the Chiefs cannot carry four running backs. So it is Ware 1, Hunt 2. I think Kareem Hunt's role is going to grow, but I'm also not going to be the first guy to take him in any fantasy football league. Because I think Spencer Ware, remember how good Spencer Ware was last year? Remember how good he was before that injury? Talk about a fantasy football darling. He was one of the waiver wire darlings, I guess. He was one of those the hot waiver wire pickups. Because he was great. He was getting tons of usage. He was using it very well. He was performing. He was producing. Spencer Ware was great last year until that injury snuck up on him. And then it slowed him down all year. Spencer Ware also, by the way, in that drive, had three receptions for 20 yards. He was the third leading receiver. In fact, he led the team in receptions with three. Tyler Bray's offensive storming was not great. And then by the time Patrick Mahomes came in, it was Garrett Dieter and Orson Charles. If I gave you 1,000 chances to, like, identify Orson Charles in a lineup, I don't think anybody could, right? I mean, maybe some people at training camp. We're going to have Matt Derrick on whenever camp wraps up for the day. He might be able to identify Orson Charles. But whenever I read the name Orson Charles, I thought of Orson Welles. Orson Charles is a tight end. He's a large man. Probably not an Orson Welles lookalike. The other thing from the game that actually made it very difficult to watch, God, there were so many flags. I don't have a flag count in front of me, but there had to be, I don't know, 4 million, conservatively. Just an estimate. Brutal. I mean, the game, just very difficult to watch. Back on the first team defense, though, as I mentioned earlier, the run defense later on in the game did not look great. The first team run defense looked very good. I was very happy with their performance, and again, they were doing that largely doing that without Benny Logan. They were doing that without Chris Jones. They were doing that with Derek Johnson still on the mend. No Tom Bahali still, for whatever that's worth. The defense is going to be really, really good this year. In fact, I think there's a really good chance the defense this year is better than it was last year by way of depth and talent. Not by way of production. I would be surprised if they're scoring more points than they did last year, because last year, in a lot of ways, was just sort of a statistical anomaly. That's not a word at all. Last year was sort of a statistical anomaly by how productive the Chiefs were, both in turnovers and in points scored. But I think they could be a better defense, kind of by the eyeball test, than they were last year, if not by the stat sheets. Because remember, the criticism, and there was a call like this in Chiefs postgame after the game on Friday. There was a guy that was saying that he's still holding out on Bob Sutton. He thinks Bob Sutton's going to cost the Chiefs some games this year because the defense hasn't been good sort of until the red zone. They use the phrase between the 20s. That doesn't really make any sense. But, you know, the way that you're working is essentially until you get to the red zone, the Chiefs' defense has struggled. That's what they were all last year. Last year, they were a bend-but-don't-break defense. They were that on Friday against the Niners. But last year, they were doing it with Hurt D. Ford and Tambaha Lee, and with Ramique Wilson and Justin March Lillard, and with Jay Howard, Ricky Chris Jones, Dontari Poe. The front seven has gotten considerably better than what you saw, especially against the Steelers. You get Derek Johnson back. Ramique Wilson looked really good. That's another guy that if you need some names to toss around the water cooler tomorrow or whatever, Ramique Wilson is going to be a guy who I think he's going to be the guy who ends up starting beside Derek Johnson in the 3-4 defense. I think Kevin Pierre-Louis is going to make the team. And then I really liked what I've seen from Justin March Lillard now. But he was out there in the fourth quarter, which was surprising to me because I figured that he was going to be in that rotation very seriously. It's Justin March Lillard and Josh Malga competing for, I think, sort of that fourth spot. Because I think, obviously, Derek Johnson, obviously, Ramique Wilson and Kevin Pierre-Louis, I think, are the three guys who are going to certainly make this team. And then I would probably end up seeing... I would probably go March Lillard as my fourth guy there. Anyway, Ramique Wilson looked really good. He experienced so much growth last year. He got talked about here and there. He got talked about in some circles also. Like, I know that he got some run on, like, you know, your Chiefs podcasts that needed some extra work during the middle of the season. Like, guilty. Like, myself included. That's not shade at Chiefs podcasts. Like, I know I talked about Ramique Wilson last year in little spurts. But I didn't hear him getting, say, like, a ton of attention during game broadcasts or whatever. But Ramique Wilson experienced a lot of growth last season, and he looked really good on Friday night. Obviously, he and Derek Johnson are the starters there. As long as Derek Johnson is healthy, he doesn't seem to be slowing down. He did say at training camp and after the game on Friday, he's still in a recovery process. He's totally good mentally, he said twice now, but he's not where he wants to be physically. That makes sense. It's a guy who's had two Achilles injuries. I get that. But if he's even kind of himself this year, he and Ramique Wilson in the middle are going to be an upgrade over essentially he and Ramique Wilson in the middle from last year. The evolution of Chris Jones, I think, is going to continue to be fascinating. Benny Logan over Dontari Poe, I've said this several times. I know you've heard me say this before. But I think Benny Logan, and very likely in both facets of the game, is going to be step up over Dontari Poe. But especially when it comes to stopping the run. Alvin Bailey returning. He was getting thrown around as a surprise cut name for a little while, which I thought at the time sounded absolutely ridiculous. And I feel that even... not necessarily more strongly now, but I think everyone else is probably backing off on that now. He's going to be a force. He was a force before he got hurt. 2 years ago, he was tremendous. Last year, for the blink of an eye that he was around, I was very hopeful for him. But I maintain he's going to be tremendous this year, especially when it comes to rushing the passer. And often getting to the run, like, back in his zone. I'm very excited about Alan Bailey. That defensive line has gotten better. The inside linebacker spots have gotten better. Then the outside linebacker spots are the most important position here and have the room for the most growth. Best for last situation. If Justin Houston is Justin Houston again, and if D. Ford looks like D. Ford before his injury, which he has said was the reason that he was slowing down, he said this training camp, a week or so ago, he said, listen, that hamstring injury was hurting me last year. Now, he said, you know, it's part of our job to stay healthy, but it was hurting me last year. if he looks like the guy that he was after, I'm sorry, before the injury, if he's the guy who he was before the injury, and if Justin Houston looks like an actually rehabbed Justin Houston, you're talking about two Pro Bowl outside linebackers, two Pro Bowl pass rushers behind a Pro Bowl caliber defensive line outside of some Pro Bowl caliber inside linebackers. And then behind them, you've got the best second, one of the best secondaries in football. You've got maybe the second best group of safeties. And maybe you're stuck behind Seattle. But Eric Berry, Ron Parker, Daniel Sorensen, even as your third guy, is an extremely talented group of safeties. And you have a little bit of fear at corner because Terrence Mitchell's out today. Marcus Peters, if he gets hurt, the secondary starts to look a whole lot worse. But if those corners can stay healthy, if there's more depth there than we think, the Chiefs seem to think there's some depth there. I'm guessing they'll sign somebody else's sort of like last roster cut at corner and will replace a guy like Kenneth Acker or whatever. But if those corners can stay any sort of healthy, the Chiefs defense is going to be really, really good. And Bob Sutton's biggest strength is covering up for the defense's biggest weakness. But whenever the defense doesn't have any glaring weaknesses, there's so much room for Bob Sutton to play around. There is so much room to get into the head of an opposing quarterback. There's so much room there. So many weapons there. That I think you should be excited about the Chiefs' defense. And a lot of it does depend on if they stay healthy. But a lot of NFL teams are doing that right now. No one is prepared to lose their two best pass rushers again. And the Chiefs went through that last year. The Chiefs lost their two best defensive ends and then lost their two best pass rushers. No defense is prepared for that, and the defense was still great last year. So you're going to be saying, as long as they stay healthy. But truly, if this defense is just luckier than it was last year when they were ravaged by injuries defensively, the defense is going to be amazing. Whenever we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about Patrick Mahomes' preseason debut, now the number two quarterback, apparently, according to some reports out of training camp. And we'll talk about all the reasons that you either should be excited or maybe you should be hesitant, but mostly excited. Talk about that next here on Sports Sunday.
This is Sports Sunday.
And Geesert, I think the best physical evidence that we have as a culture for evidence of Satan being real.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Like, I've never seen a demon in the biblical sense, but I also might have. I might be looking at one right now.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. My name is Joshua Briscoe. Charlie Carlin was running the board for the last segment. Now, Rudy Salazar getting in those weekend reps.
Yeah, Charlie's running around here somewhere.
Did he just, leave?
I think he went to the bathroom. I could be wrong, but he was like, if I'm not back in time, he's just running. I'm like, I got you.
So this wasn't really him being like, hey, Rudy, this is you getting some trial by fire, experience running Sports Sunday. This was just Charlie leaving and saying, hey, man, I'm going to be a minute. Just if the commercial break ends while I'm gone, hop in.
Yeah, basically. Great. Yeah, that's how we do things here.
That's true. It's very much that's the way that this show is most. Now Charlie's taking the headsets back. This is like Alex Smith having his finger dislocated for a second, like three plays, and then coming back in and be like, all right, coach, give me my helmet. We've wrapped it up. I'm ready to go in. But I think if Charlie ever dislocated a finger, we would have to go off the air. Like the scream, you'd be able to hear the screaming through the soundproof walls, I'm pretty sure. 913-3810-810 is the phone number if you want to talk currently Chiefs, because that's just where we're at. We'll talk about Patrick Mahomes here in just a minute. Let's kick it off with Jed Jed, you're on Sports Sunday. What's on your mind?
Hey, Josh. What's up, man? How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. A couple of things on the Chiefs. I agree with you. I thought the first team offense looked really solid. Alex Smith on that deep ball early in the game, that was a perfect throw. Mm-hmm. I actually was thinking in regards to, like, Mahomes on the ball. I think it went to Conley, and it was called back. But he even underthrew that ball. Like, the ball that Smith threw was better than the deep ball that Mahomes threw. But,
it was.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the defense, if that's all right.
Sure.
You were talking about how you thought this defense has an opportunity to be better than last year's. And where I agree with you in the sense that I think the front seven has an opportunity to be a lot better. I guess where I'm apprehensive is the defense was so reliant on turnovers last year. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're going to be able to replicate, you know, that same amount of takeaways, especially in the red zone where they were really strong. And I guess the other thing I was thinking about, you were talking about E. Ford, and I know he's everybody's favorite whipping boy here in the town. Mm-hmm. He had a solid year last year, and I know that he was kind of plagued by injuries. My other concern would be that we haven't seen him and Justin Houston really play on the field at the same time.
Right.
And whenever he moves over to the other side, it seems like he loses his productivity.
Yeah, well, so kind of working backwards, that issue was a little bit of the chicken or the egg question for me. Was it an injury thing? Was it the side? And since he sort of copped the injury being a big part of the problem, I've gotten a little bit more optimistic about it being the injury, not about it being the side that he rushed on. Because D. Ford, he's played on both sides of the defense throughout his career. Justin Houston almost entirely lines up over the right tackle, which makes sense. It's usually where you put your better passer. The deep ball thing, well, I guess also with the rest of the defense, I don't expect their production to improve this year, but because of the fact that they were so good in the red zone, they were so good at forcing turnovers, and they were so good at scoring points, I don't expect any of those things to take an uptick on the stat sheet. I think you're going to see the defense improve essentially up to the red zone. If the red zone defense is the same as it was last year, this team's going to the playoffs again, almost regardless of what else happens. But
sure.
I think the defense leading up to the red zone is where it has a chance to improve, because that, for me, is where the front seven is so important. If you're not getting gashed by the running game between the 20s, then you are all of a sudden stopping teams at the 50 more often than you're having to wait until you get that shorter field and everything gets sort of scrunched together wherever your front seven doesn't have so much ground to cover and it doesn't feel so slow. So that's the exact direction I'm leaning defensively.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I feel you. They were really bad in yards given up. I forget where exactly they ranked. But, yeah, I mean, I can see that, I guess, I don't know, like you said, play chicken and egg, that obviously if they are stopping teams, you know, that's going to put the offense in a worse position, you know, starting at least. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have much longer fields to go. And I know, like I was saying, I thought the first team offense looked good, and I thought Alex Smith looked sharp, but it was also the preseason, and they were playing one of the worst teams in football.
Yes.
So with the longer fields, you hope that Andy Reid, you know, is able to dial up things. I know there was no Kelce, but, you know, Tyreek Hill, I know that's your boy. You've definitely been on him, like, since the beginning of OTAs and stuff. So, I don't know, it should be fun, but I always appreciate you listening or talking football, man.
Always happy to, Jed. Thanks for the call. I think that this offense is going to have more ways to make up a lot of field position, but I also think that we need to make sure that we don't forget how good this special teams unit was. Now the Chiefs had I think they were, I can't remember where they were in field starting average starting field position. I tweeted it a while back because last year they had a very good average starting field position and a very average total percentage of touchdowns scored on those drives. But Dave Tobe in this special teams unit is going to consistently have good starting field position. If they're returning punts and they're not getting coffin cornered constantly, then even DeAnthony Thomas or C.J. Spiller, whoever it is that Tobe decides is going to be the guy returning the kicks, because he will get to say, listen, it could be anybody. I believe fully that Dave Tobe says, I get I get two or three guys on this roster. I don't know what the number is. But I get two guys on this roster that no matter what anyone else says, I get to keep. And maybe it's a defensive sort of specialist, and it's a return specialist. So there's going to be that guy. The Chiefs are going to have that guy. And with the whole scheme on special teams that the Chiefs have been using these last several years, that Toe's been using since Devin Hester, the Chiefs are going to have good field position still. I'm not too worried about that. The other thing that Jed mentioned is something that I was going to talk about this segment either way, is that honestly, if Patrick Mahomes would have been in an Alex Smith jersey and had his exact same outing, we would have all been like, oh yeah, that's fine. Like, that would have been our reaction. Now, I know that we're doing this on a different scale. It's a sliding scale of what's good for Patrick Mahomes is not good for Alex Smith in his first preseason game. But that deep ball that Mahomes threw to perhaps Chris Conley, and I just cannot remember for the life of me. Jed said if that was Conley, though. The deep ball that Patrick Mahomes threw on his first play was a little bit underthrown, and it was undone by a hold, which was a bummer because it was completed, and it was a nice throw, but it was underthrown. Then after that, it was a screen to Shontavious Jones, and then another penalty, and then a sack, and then a dump-off. That, essentially, Patrick Mahomes underthrew a deep ball and then hit some checkdowns, and that was somehow still exciting because it was the Chiefs' rookie quarterback. I'm not saying it should not have been exciting. I hope that you were as excited by it as I was. But objectively, it wasn't a great outing. It did end up, though, getting the Chiefs a touchdown later on a super short field. Mahomes scrambled around and ran to his right and then threw back left to Marcus Kemp on a throw that only Marcus Kemp could have caught. The ball was not put anywhere else. It was Mahomes was sort of directing traffic and pointing around and making something happen, and Kemp came back for the ball. It was a good connection. It was good chemistry between Mahomes and Kemp. As again, I mentioned earlier, Patrick Mahomes is getting second team reps with the team today, maybe officially making that move up the depth chart whenever the next depth chart comes out. Perhaps bringing Marcus Kemp up with him there, maybe because of their connection. It ends up being a touchdown there for Patrick Mahomes, and Srin Petro, if you've ever heard of that name, roll across the station. He had a tweet actually about Patrick Mahomes it was DeMarcus Robinson. I think it was Tyler Bray's deep ball to Chris Conley, and it was Patrick Mahomes' deep ball to DeMarcus Robinson. Here's what Srin said. If a 41-yard completion from Mahomes to Robinson isn't negated by holding, Mahomes finishes 8 for 10 for 90 yards, one touchdown, no picks, and 139.6 passer rating. Which, you know, like, you could get the shakes for that. I get it. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't play that game. And somebody also said, like, you know, what if that throwback across his body into a packed end zone is picked off? Where does he finish then? Well, if that happens, then he's Alex Smith. The reason, and this is going to take some time for a lot of Chiefs fans, I don't know, they're just, and maybe this is just Twitter right now, because man, Twitter is, at this point, maybe half and half, just like some of the best possible things and some of the worst possible people. So if you're this type of person, and you're just sort of like agitated all the time, then you're going to have to do some retraining of yourself. Patrick Mahomes rolling right and then throwing left and then having it be a touchdown is not something that you get to complain about anymore, or at all. And really, whenever he does that and it is picked off, you also can't complain, because that's Patrick Mahomes. Now listen, if you see that happen, and then you put on your Deshaun Watson jersey, fine. Fine. If you've been saying since draft time, if you said before training camp, and after that I'm not going to let you do this again, but if you said before training camp, I want Deshaun Watson and not Patrick Mahomes, and you're willing to put your name on that, and that's just going to be how you look at this for the rest of their careers, then so be it. If you would have traded up for Deshaun Watson instead, then you can have him. If you're in any other place, I am not interested in hearing you complain about Patrick Mahomes playing football like Patrick Mahomes. His play style is so different than anything you've seen here, and maybe you will have that knee-jerk thought of, well, what if that throw across his body is a pick instead of a touchdown? But you're going to have to let that go. It's how he plays football. And Deshaun Watson doesn't play like that. That's why I pointed that out. If you wanted Deshaun Watson this whole time, and then you can criticize Patrick Mahomes for playing like Brett Favre instead of playing like Alex Smith. That's fine. You can do that. Only you, though. Only you, Deshaun Watson people. I don't want to see you changing your goal point for Patrick Mahomes based off him looking like he's playing recklessly. That's who he is. And you know who also is very aware of that? You know who watched a lot of his tape and was very comfortable with this whole play style that he has? Andy Reid. And the whole Chiefs front office. This is how he plays. And apparently, starting today, he's your backup quarterback. And a year from today, he's going to be your starting quarterback. And then you'll find out. You'll find out if it worked or not.
This is Sports Sunday.
Well, the Chiefs traded up and got Patrick Mahomes, and everybody knows what's going on. Everybody from Alex Smith to Pat Mahomes to the Chiefs' Twitter account, who is putting out stuff about Pat Mahomes throwing a pass to Jeremy Maclin, effectively erasing Alex Smith from everyone's memory.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Last time I talked about this, I said it was like watching, like before the ink on the divorce papers were dry, your mom was taping pictures of her boyfriend's face over the family photos of you and mom and dad.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
It's my best analogy of all time. And now, in case you missed it, mom's boyfriend is moving on up. Pat Mahomes getting the second team reps at training camp today. Although, again, I guess Jeremy Maclin is mom. And now mom's gone. There's a cardinal on the balcony right now, but it's a female cardinal. I don't know how popular this understanding is, but because I mentioned it to somebody in this building at one point. I don't remember if it was you, Charlie, if it was Beards, or somebody else. But the way you tell the difference between male and female birds is the male birds are much brighter coloring, have much brighter coloring. Yeah, Charlie says he doesn't know that. Didn't know that. Yeah, because the female ones, they're more like brown and muted colors, so they can blend in the foliage in their nests, so they're harder to spot by, like, predators or whatever. Although, I don't really know what eats cardinals. I guess other bigger birds.
Wow, I learned something today.
That's the goal, man. You got to learn something every day on this show. Usually, you learn that the Royals are a 500 team for the 18th straight show. Today, you learn about birds. Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know if that's not widely known, then? Because I'm guessing, actually, if you search, like, why are some... Oh, man. I typed why are some... Oh, God. I was going to just type why are some birds and see, like, what if people were looking for why are some birds, you know, like, not as brightly colored as others or whatever. But the first autofill results for why are some, it goes, why are some eggs brown, which is actually very close to the same point we're on, right? But why are some eggs brown? Why are some people gay? Why are some people left-handed? Why are some farts hot? Why are some people not ticklish?
Google's a strange place.
Three of those I've been wondering my whole life. Why are some birds brightly colored is the first thing. Why are some birds brightly colored is the first thing. And I think it's like a whole, I think it's a mating thing, essentially. One of the first things about pigment, which doesn't, whoa. Fortunately for some birds, some predators do not see the same bright blue reflections that we do. So they remain protected. That's interesting. Aha! Why do male birds have bright colors? When it's time to mate, male birds show off their plumage to attract a mate. In experiments, female birds prefer males with more fanciful feathers or brighter colors. That's why my hair is always on fleek. Scientists think that females use male feather color and condition as a way to determine if he is healthy or will take good care of their nestlings. But now I want to make sure that I've got this thing about female birds right. Why are female... Why are female Marines called Wookiees? Is that a thing? Like Chewbacca. Like, I'm comfortable saying that because it's here and that's not like a curse word or anything. That seems like it's probably... I didn't know that was a thing. The first one for why are female, as I was having why are female birds, it was why are female comedians so bad? And that's just Amy Schumer's fault, right? That's a completely unfair question. Just if it's why is Amy Schumer? Why are female birds less colorful? For example, females of species that are exposed to predators while incubating tend to have dull colors, although both sexes may have brightly colored in species, that nest in tree hollows because the females are less visible to predators, I add parenthetically, like inside of a tree. That's, yeah, blend that into the foliage. You learn something every day here. Sports Sunday, huh? What about that? I was right. Charlie looks like he wants to say something so badly, but like, go ahead.
I'm just trying to apply it to, unfortunately, the Royals getting swept by the Cardinals the other day.
And it's fine.
Just, you know, you nerd. Yeah, I couldn't really think of it. Like, the Royals were very visible to the Predator Cardinals.
Apparently Cardinals see blue just fine.
Yeah.
There we go. We got there. Team effort. Yeah, some predators don't see blue like humans do. Apparently, Cardinals not having that problem. Or Orioles. Apparently, Orioles and Cardinals see blue just bleeping fine. I also wanted to point another tweet from Seren that I thought was an interesting point. Where Kareem Hunt got one carry and had one catch in the first preseason game. Seren said, I wonder if Reed is keeping him off the film for opponents, and then is it going to be a big part of the game plan in week one? And that is such an Andy Reid thing to do. And also, like, a smart thing to do. It's also a very Bill Belichick thing to do. I cannot see a world in where Kareem Hunt gets 1/18th as many touches as Spencer Ware does in week one. Or even, I mean, you can make it a tenth. Now, maybe Kareem Hunt only gets 5 or 6 touches. But if he does, I think he's going to be used. I think Kareem Hunt is going to be used somewhat similarly to how Tyreek Hill was used early in the season. And then not evolve like Tyreek Hill, because Kareem Hunt is a running back and Tyreek Hill is a receiver. But I think you're going to see him get a chance to carry the ball, maybe not in a high volume, but in some instances where he's going to be able to make some plays. Now, I also, the one fault in this is I don't think Bill Belichick is going to go like, didn't see Kareem Hunt in the preseason, we'll just leave him alone. We just won't worry about him. Because that's obviously not, you know, Bill Belichick's not going to have that problem. But I do think that's interesting, and I believe very strongly that Kareem Hunt is going to be a large part of this offense. I think Spencer Ware is the guy. I think he's sort of the workhorse, which is not, I don't use that as a pejorative. I feel like most of the things that we say about powerful running backs is used as a sort of a demeaning term. And it's not the case with Spencer Ware. Remember, last year before his injury, Spencer Ware was downright agile. He looked good catching the ball out of the backfield, which is not something I expected from Spencer Ware last season. That was genuinely surprising. I just got some words stuck in my mouth. I was surprised by how good Spencer Ware was with the ball last year. It's going to be a combination of Ware and Hunt, and I like this idea that maybe Andy Reid is just sort of holding Kareem Hunt back a little bit as the Chiefs get ready for week one against the Patriots. By the way, I've been keeping the Patriots-Jaguars preseason game on NFL Network up in front of me this whole time. And spoiler alert, the Patriots get beat by the Jags. I'm not worried about week one anymore, are you? You shouldn't be. Blake Bortles goes deep. Touchdown.
This is Sports Sunday.
People are about to destroy you on Twitter.
I know, I'm ready for it. Oh, but if you want to destroy me on Twitter, it's at JB Briscoe.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Follow me, then destroy me.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Yeah. I pull up in Lexus like it's welcome back to Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. My name is Joshua Briscoe. I'm on Twitter at JB Briscoe. Follow me, then destroy me. We're going back to the Chiefs because I can't take any more of the Royals yelling anymore. It was just too much. Also, I had like a nice big stretch during the commercial break, and I think I pulled a muscle in my left, not my left butt. That's not right because I only have the one, but like left glute, I think. I don't know. I just Matt Derrick, you might have to carry this segment for me. I don't know if I can do it.
Well, I know if I was asking one of the Chiefs coaches or trainers, they would just say that you had a butt.
Right. And listen, Matt, I've been told that for years. You don't have to follow that up with anything. I don't have anything to follow that up with. One thing I did promise you as I was trying to lure you to doing the show again, is I told you that last week, after our segment, we got ridiculous praise, and I was thinking we had a caller saying it. We actually didn't. A caller called in and told Charlie this, and then told me. So we have the sound of me saying it, which isn't as cool as I wanted it to be. But here's the sound from last week. Charlie said, it might have been the opposite. Charlie said that he got a call this last segment telling Charlie that last segment we just did was the best segment that's been on this station in the last 5 years. He just woke up from a coma after being in it for 4 years and 11 months and like 3 weeks. But hey, that's pretty good. It's at least the best segment we've done today, for sure. Best segment during this show on this station today, absolutely.
The best segment that's been on this station in 5 years, Matt. How do you feel about that?
Well, I feel pretty good, but I also feel pretty bad because I don't remember what I said last week.
Yeah, oh, no, me neither. The one thing, here's what I know, is that no one called in after you were talking with Cody Tapp. No one's ever called in after you and Cody and said, hey, that's the best thing on this station in 5 years. Uh-uh.
Yeah, there are occasionally calls, but they're usually calls saying, well, you make sure these two guys never talk to each other again.
Right, and so I think what this clearly means is you've been consistent. You're always a high performer. What this means is that I am clearly I'm the Andy Reid. You're the quarterback. You're the clay. You're the clay in my hands. I've molded you into an exquisite guest in a way that Cody never could. Cody's is Bill O'Brien, and I'm Andy Reid.
You're Marcus Peters, and I'm Chontavious Jones. I mean, iron sharpens iron.
I like that too. That's good. All right, so you're out in St. Joe right now. I know that because you gave me updates about you riding up the hill on the media cart, which I'm sure was as thrilling today as it's ever been. Did that get off without a hitch, by the way?
It did. Okay. Unfortunately, we were just a few seconds short, so I still do not know which Chiefs player it is that is driving the cool black Maserati.
Dang.
That's still my number one goal of camp.
Okay. Well, if you maybe just need to camp out like behind the little parking space sign. And then just have Periscope running, so eventually you'll break that story to everybody. Because I'm guessing that there are a handful of guys you could consider seeing driving a cool Maserati.
Oh yeah, you've got odds on it and everything like that. But yeah, we'd like to have confirmation.
That would be good. So you're out in St. Joe right now. A couple of things have happened today that were very interesting. I saw you tweeted early this morning that Patrick Mahomes was the quarterback out second after Alex Smith. Has that depth chart change been made?
I think he can at least make it on pencil for sure.
Nice.
Andy Reid talked about it afterwards and everything and said that that's something that they wanted to do to get Patrick more experience with the second team. And he was coming in the way that they've been doing it. He was coming in with for a few reps with the first team offense, getting some experience with them, with the offensive line especially, and then taking over with the second team and then kind of doing the same thing with Bray. The same kind of rotation they've been using, just flipping these two guys. Reid says it doesn't have anything to do with Bray's performance, but that Patrick has earned it. He was a little bit more dodgy if this is a permanent change and something that's going to stick. But at least for now, Patrick Mahomes is number two.
Well, and also, you can say it didn't have anything to do with Tyler Bray's performance, but Patrick Mahomes took the number two job because Tyler Bray wasn't great. That's something that Andrew, I guess, feels like he has to say. But regardless, would you feel pretty confident at this point betting that Patrick Mahomes is going to be the number two guy by week one?
I think at this point it's probably more likely than not. I mean, I think something probably fairly extraordinary would have to happen for them to switch back. And, you know, and I still think that the Chiefs' number one preference is that Patrick Mahomes doesn't play this year. They want to get him in some experience, but they just don't want to rush him in.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep saying all along, especially behind the scenes, that they want to take this slow. But it's starting to feel maybe a little bit more like 1999 with, you know, Reed's first year in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. when he had an established veteran with Doug Peterson, and they drafted Donovan McNabb. They started the season with Peterson, and it wasn't until the season went kaplooey that they flipped over to McNabb. And I still think that if you're going to see Patrick Mahomes on the field this year, it will be because this season has gone disastrously.
Okay.
But there's absolutely no if there's nobody, if number two is quarterback doesn't have to play, there's no reason Mahomes can't be the number two.
I just remembered this. Did the NFL change the rule about not being able to dress your third quarterback?
It has changed. you, he doesn't have to be active. And I'm trying to remember if it's you can still pull that third quarterback if your first two quarterbacks are injured, but they don't have to be on the active roster.
Okay.
But most teams still, I mean, most of the Chiefs last year usually just went with two quarterbacks on the active roster and didn't activate a third.
Okay, yeah, I was thinking there was something that had changed with there wasn't really an incentive to deactivate your third quarterback, or you could go to him as if, you, like you said, if your first one was injured. I don't remember how that setup was. So I'm guessing that there's still going to have to be a sort of depth chart statement, especially in week one. If Tyler Bray is inactive, then you're saying that if Alex Smith gets hurt against the Patriots, then Patrick Mahomes is going to play, you know, for a half against New England, and that would be very interesting. But that's probably neither here nor there. I'm curious also, Matt, what you saw from the preseason game that stood out that maybe you haven't heard getting enough run as people have discussed the game.
I think it's probably a bit hard to draw any conclusions from it. I think there were some good things and bad things that they did.
Mm-hmm.
Probably standing out most is the run game was just disastrous.
Yeah.
But the team's also talked about the fact that they really didn't put any emphasis on it. I mean, they went very vanilla in their run scheme. They just tried to run a couple of times and didn't really put any effort into it. They really kind of wanted to throw the football. So I don't think you can read too much into that. Reed did for certain say that he wanted to see better blocking. He wanted to see a little bit better performance out of the backs. And I think he wants to see more of certain guys like Kareem Hunt. But I don't know if you could really draw a whole lot of conclusions from that. I thought the number one conclusion, obviously the best thing to pull from it, was the first team offense.
Yeah.
That thing absolutely clicked, and I don't know if you can overestimate that, because they did everything that this team couldn't do last year. They moved the ball in chunks. They converted some big plays. They punched it in the end zone. You know, this was one of the worst teams in the league last year in the red zone,
yep,
scoring touchdowns. So they ticked off all the boxes, so I don't think you can overestimate the value of that.
The red zone was the one place for the 2 days that I was out in training camp where it seemed like they were just spending a lot of time on it. For me, I started drawing some comparisons to how last year they spent a lot of time in the two-minute offense, because it was terrible in the year prior. And last season, the two-minute offense was greatly improved, so I have some hope that the red zone offense will follow a similar path. You mentioned the running back. Seren Petro tweeted something Friday. I think it was Friday night. Maybe it was Saturday. Saying that he thought there was a chance that one of the main reason for not using Kareem Hunt more, he only got that one snap with the first team, was because the plan is already set for Kareem Hunt, where he's going to be a guy that goes out there against New England and is essentially putting his first stuff on NFL film in a live game, serving as a sort of secret, quote-unquote, weapon against New England. What do you think about that theory?
I think it's a possibility. I do think they just want to give him some experience out there, so I wouldn't be surprised if you see more of him in the next couple of games. I think they would definitely like to get him some experience with the first team. Today we saw, it was clear cut. There was no really today alternating or shifting off Kareem Hunt's number two back on this team from the snaps today.
Mm-hmm.
He did basically the exact same thing that Patrick Holmes did. He was coming in with the first team after Spencer Ware, and taking even more reps with the first team than he has before, and then moving into the second team. He's definitely number two back on this team, and is going to play a lot. And I wouldn't be surprised if they do want to kind of maybe shield him a bit from prying eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you'll see him. But once again, it's just going to be pure vanilla offense.
Travis Kelce, Benny Logan, Chris Jones all returned to practice today. Chris Jones obviously coming off the PUP list, which I think we should just always call the pup list. It just sounds way more fun than what it actually is. It sounds like a whole list of, like, small dogs. That's great. Any of those guys look particularly good or bad in camp today as they were all returning from their injuries?
Kelce looked fine. And good. We talked to him after practice, and he said that he appreciated the fact that he got some time off to just let the knee calm down and ease the inflammation. But he said he didn't think it was a big deal, that if it had been regular season, he definitely would have been playing and practicing. So he just really kind of just valued the time to just let that knee heal on its own and get healthy, which you can afford to do this time of year.
Sure.
But he showed no ill effects. He was out there playing 100%. It looked like he had good speed. He was diving on the ground. He was himself. Chris Jones, he went straight to the the sidelines after position drills early on and everything. Okay. They're going to ease him back in.
Sure.
We asked him about the timetable, about when he's actually going to start practicing and might get into some preseason games. And he said the team had a plan, but he wouldn't tell us what it was. So
okay.
We don't really know. Benny Logan, same thing. He went through drills, but he wasn't in there for any of the live contact. You know, the fact he's back on the field is a good sign. So it does suggest that he's going to be back in there pretty soon. But they do have some other guys that they can at least now take a look at, even if they are a bit thin at that position.
I know Eric Berry didn't play in the game, but I didn't hear anything about Berry at practice today. What was he out there?
He was out on the sidelines, too. He was still working in the medical tent, stretching with the injured guy. So, yeah, Terrence Mitchell, Steven Nelson, Cairo Santos, they were all over there with Eric Berry today. And then Jones joined them later.
So with Mitchell and – Terrence Mitchell and Steven Nelson both out today again, correct?
Yeah, they both of them kind of same injuries they had before going into the first preseason game. Nelson with the groin strain and Mitchell with the hamstring issue. Obviously, they both played through it on Friday night, and you know Reed says they're not serious long-term concerns.
But with those two guys out today, who was getting the extra first-team action among those corners?
Primarily Phillip Gaines. He was coming in for the right cornerback, and then when they were going into the nickel and dime packages, DJ White was coming in there. Rotate a few other guys in there. One other notable injury, Ashton Lampkin, who's an undrafted free agent from Oklahoma State.
Mm-hmm.
He looked pretty good at times. He had a nice big hit on Friday night. He left with a knee injury today, so we don't know the extent of that yet.
Between the preseason game and everything you've seen at camp, do you have any feelings on the bottom of the wide receiver rotation? Anybody seeming to sort of get a little bit of ground to pick up on a guy like maybe Albert Wilson or maybe DeAnthony Thomas, guys who are sort of on that bubble?
Yeah, I think that's – I think the incumbents are kind of solidifying their roles a little bit. Yeah, Andy Reid even talked about yesterday. He mentioned the fact that Albert Wilson's had a really good camp. DeAnthony Thomas is being included in a lot of things, and he caught a couple of big passes today from Patrick Mahomes in their kind of one-minute drill. So, I mean, I think those two have really solidified their positions over the last week, which really means that you might be talking about Shontavious Jones and DeMarcus Robinson for that final spot. Unless they decide to keep seven wide receivers, which is an awful lot to try and keep.
Yeah.
But I think DeAnthony Thomas is absolutely almost wrapped up his position. Albert Wilson, I think, is pretty close to having that one wrapped up, too. Marcus Kemp, you know, is one of those sleeper guys.
Mm-hmm.
He's sneaking up there. I don't think that he can necessarily beat out Jones or Robinson at this point, but I think he's probably next on the list. He was getting some second-team reps today with Mahomes, who they've developed a really good connection, and Kemp seems to be picking up just fine with Tyler Bray, because they hooked up for a couple of big plays today too.
Well, I was just thinking, I guess Kemp and Shontavious Jones, you would think you could probably get, I don't know if you could probably at least take a shot at getting those guys to the practice squad. I would think that DeMarcus Robinson would probably not make it. I would think a team, some receiver needy team, would take a shot on him because he was a little more highly touted coming in to the NFL. I don't need to see more Albert Wilson, though, Matt. I don't need more Albert Wilson. I know what he is already, and it's not great.
Yeah, the coaches staff, they really like him. Yeah, I mean, and there's a lot of things that they like him for, the things that I do kind of overlooked and underrated. I mean, he does, we've talked about it before, he does a lot of the dirty work underneath.
Yeah.
He does make some key catches. I mean, he's a great special teams guy. There's a lot of things that they really like about him, and I definitely get it. I see the fans' criticism, and I can see why, you know, people can be hard on him at times. But I do think that he's probably one of the more underrated players, especially in that group, because he does things that a lot of the other receivers just either can't do or won't do.
So I know, obviously, Chris Conley is going to be making this team, and he's going to be, I would think, the number two wide receiver. But I'm curious what you think Chris Conley is going to do this year, because for all of the conversations we've had about Marcus Kemp and Shontavious Jones, I haven't heard a whole lot of, I don't know, optimistic speculation about Chris Conley. It seems like he's kind of still just Chris Conley.
You know, it's an interesting point, because I think it's kind of fair that some other guys overshadowed him, and today was not one of those days. He definitely overshadowed everybody else today.
Good.
Had a great move on the outside against Marcus Peters, a little stop and go that just absolutely ran past him and made a diving catch on a ball from Alex Smith. Today was one of those days where Conley definitely looked all of the number two receiver that you would want.
Good.
And he is kind of he was my pick in the summer as kind of a player that I think is going to break out and have a big season.
Okay.
And I'm still sticking with that because I think that when you weed everything out, you know, he's going to be getting a lot of the balls that we're talking about now that are going to a DeMarcus Robinson and going to a Shontavious Jones. Once you get it to the regular season, those guys are going to drift into the background, and Chris Conley is going to be out there all the time, and those are the balls that I think he's going to be going for. But remember, I mean, he is going to be, I think, on this team, might be the fourth or fifth option when you're talking about Tyreek Hill. You've mm-hmm. got Travis Kelce. They're going to get one or both of the running backs into it more.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's going to be further down the list, but, you know, the guy, what, had about 60 catches, 500 yards last year.
Yeah.
I think he might be able to better that this year.
We're talking to Matt Derrick. He's at Matt Derrick on Twitter, ChiefsDigest.com. Something else you tweeted today, Matt, that I thought was interesting was that Tyreek Hill is still the number one guy in punt returns because the Chiefs don't think that other teams are going to kick to him very often, so it gives you a field position game without risking injuring Tyreek Hill. Is that how you expect that to ultimately pan out?
I think so. I mean, I'm sure the teams are occasionally going to make a mistake and kick to him. But I think that for the most part, the Chiefs are planning on just rolling him out there with the idea that he's not going to have that many punt returns.
Hmm.
That teams will just not want to kick to him. You know, today I think that it was only him and DeAnthony Thomas back there returning punts. And that tells you a lot right there. I mean, those are the two guys that they trust the most. And I mean, punts are obviously different than kickoffs. You want somebody back there that you can rely on to catch the ball every single time. And they're pretty much down to the point where those are the two guys that they trust. And Dave Tobes talked about the fact that they think that having Hill back there on punt returns is still a weapon.
Yeah.
Because teams are going to sacrifice field position to kick away from him. And if they don't sacrifice field position, he's going to hurt them.
And DeAnthony Thomas, you said that you think he's pretty much solidified his position on this team as a receiver. He got the first kickoff return on Friday night. Is he the guy that you expect to see returning the bulk of the kickoffs again this year? Because he also ended up returning the bulk of the kickoffs last year by just a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, this year I think it's going to be pretty much him full time. It really depends on kind of who else makes the team and where their spot is on the roster. You know, Terrence Mitchell's the guy that also had return kicks. I think that might just be kind of on an emergency basis, a backup basis. Mostly because you know that Terrence Mitchell is going to make this team,
mm-hmm.
but you don't know if some of the other guys that they've had been having returning kicks are.
Right.
So, you know, it might end up being that a guy like Terrence Mitchell ends up being the third kick return guy or fourth return guy because the other people that they have, you know, DeMarcus Robinson, Shontavious Jones, Derek Dieter, C.J. Spiller,
mm-hmm.
you know, some of these guys, a lot of those guys might not make the team.
All right, Matt, we'll get you out of here on this. What was the most interesting thing you heard from any of the guys who spoke today after practice?
I think probably the most interesting thing was probably the bits about Mahomes and where he's fitting under the depth chart. You know, I posted it on Twitter about what, you know, Andy Reid said about the fact that this was about Patrick Mahomes, you know, needing an opportunity with the second team and that he's earned it. And nothing about Tyler Bray's performance. And I see from my mentions quickly that no one is believing that. They really
right.
think that it has a lot to do with Tyler Bray's performance. And you know, and he struggled a little bit today again. So another thing that I would note, I mentioned this on Twitter earlier too, you know, Sam Ficken was kind of the big star of the game on Friday to a degree because he just came out of nowhere. He was a stockbroker last Monday.
Right.
And ends up kicking in the game on Friday night. He had a really rough day today. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can tell the difference between the emergency kicker and Cairo Santos. He's got a big leg. He can boot it a long way, but he really struggled with accuracy today. I mean, Cairo Santos is the kicker on his team.
Right.
I mean, this is an understudy helping him go along, and he's a good guy, and it's a great story and everything. But you can definitely see the difference between Cairo Santos and the next best thing.
That's all. Those are all good answers. The correct answer, though, was that Chris Jones called Tano Passanio a more athletic Chris Jones.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I can't believe Well, everything that Chris Jones said. Once he got going, once he got past, you know, talk about the injury, which he didn't want to talk about, wasn't allowed to talk about. Yeah, once he turned on the Chris Jones switch, that's it after that.
All right, Matt, I dare say that these last 20 minutes have been the best 20 minutes in the history of 810 if you've never heard 810 before.
That's probably true.
Yeah, I think it has to be. I think it's literally your only option. Thank you, Matt.
Anytime, Josh.
That's Matt Derrick of ChiefsDigest.com and of at Matt Derrick on Twitter. He's one of the best Chiefs follows out there at training camp, and he is absolutely worth your time. And he also comes out and we spend radio gold, baby. That's what we do.
This is Sports Sunday.
Josh has been really good.
With Joshua Briscoe.
You know what, Josh really impressed me there tonight. I know you started off not so well.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The little smirk on your face when this song is playing is just hilarious every week.
It's just good. I like that we have a thing, you know? I like that we have a wrap-up thing. We might have to make it only like a Friday last segment thing on almost entirely sports. I don't know. I still like it. So far, I like it every day. Oh, I'm on the radio every day now? Oh, yeah, I am. That's almost entirely sports on ESPN Kansas City. That's 99.3 FM, 1510 AM, 4 to 6. Every day. Every weekday. 7 days a week would be crazy. That's too much. Just 6 days a week at this voice. Seriously, I got radio today, and then the next 5 days, that's six straight days of these beautiful takes. Bill Barnwell tweeted that Doug Marrone started Jags practice with five full pad... Doug Marrone started Jags camp with five full pad practices and an emphasis on toughness. Now Marquise Lee carted off, Leonard Fournette injured. Whoops. I can't believe Doug Marrone has a job again. All right, 913-3810-810 is the number. I said it fast because we're running out of time on this show, but is this Tommy Moe? Charlie, you said Tommy Moe, but you didn't put his name on the thing, which, you know, just makes it very difficult for me to know who's calling because I don't see any name. Oh, it's Tommy Moe. His name's on the thing now. It wasn't a second ago. It wasn't there. I wouldn't have made this a thing if it wasn't there. Tommy Moe, save us.
Jacksonville Jaguars, the toughest 4-12 team in the NFL.
Oh, they're
going
to be
right?
So tough. So tough. To win
oh
four
my
games.
God, they are so tough and so bad. Hey, Patrick Mahomes' touchdown pass.
Yeah.
To me, that was almost like a no-look basketball pass.
Yeah.
He knew where he was going with that pass, and he hit everybody going to the right, and he threw it. Now, you're taught not to throw against your body,
mm-hmm.
and maybe 25% of the time that pass, and Eric Berry might pick that pass off, but he threw it high enough.
Yep.
When I saw that play, I said, that's enough. I've seen
yes.
enough.
Yes.
He's better than Tyler Bray.
Yes.
So I
so
left
the
that
Chiefs.
Play alone right there, and he got out of a couple, scrambled, looked. He was looking up the field while scrambling. That's what you want an NFL quarterback to do. So I'm sold right now. He's the backup. Tyler Bray, I don't know. Maybe you can make this team. Maybe we can find someone else cheaper than him
mm-hmm.
to play to hold the clipboard. So, hey, last thing. Am I the only one? You ever heard the expression clipboard? Clipboard Jesus.
Yeah, sure.
When they used to call, we have a linebacker Jesus on our team and Ramique Wilson.
Is that a compliment or is that a compliment? Or,
yes, it is.
Okay,
no,
I see what you. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, like linebacker Jesus.
Yes, yes, I agree.
Ramique Wilson.
Yes,
linebacker Jesus. So there's a new nickname for Ramique Wilson.
I appreciate it.
You heard it here first, guys.
I'll take it, Tommy Moe. I will popularize that with all of these airwaves if I can. Ramique Wilson was great. And I guess it's a clipboard Jesus thing because he's a third-string linebacker, just marches right out on top. Totally down with Ramique Wilson. And, yeah, the Chiefs also saw that pass from Patrick Mahomes and said, yep, that was enough. Tyler Bray, if you aren't too interested, too worried about who your third-string quarterback is, and I don't know how many third-string quarterbacks I could honestly name accurately from team to team. The Patriots have Jacoby Brissett. I know that because he had to start for a little bit. Unless you're in a situation like that, you could save like $1.5 million by cutting Tyler Bray and going with Joel Stave as your third-string quarterback if you're the Chiefs. That's something you could genuinely do. I don't know if they will. If they don't, they're going to have to replace Tyler Bray next year because his contract is only for the rest of the season. It's like $1.6 million or something off the top of my head. I would say that it's too bad that I'm a little bit off the top of my head, maybe estimating his salary, but then I thought, actually, it's pretty sad that I'm that specifically close to knowing exactly Tyler Bray's salary this year. But I'm with you on Patrick Mahomes. I saw good things from him, and that is exciting. I don't need to see more than that to know that he's got something that Tyler Bray doesn't. I thought that that was true based off his college tape. Everybody did. That's why Tyler Bray went undrafted and Patrick Mahomes, you know, took a king's ransom to get up to 10. And I'm happy to have that future set up. And I'm also not that afraid of what would happen if he was put in a game in relief of an injured Alex Smith. Because I think that's really the question here. It's not, is Patrick Mahomes or Tyler Bray the better quarterback? The question here is, what happens to Patrick Mahomes if he has to step in at halftime against the Patriots? Or if it's in Denver later on in the season? What happens to Mahomes then? Mahomes has really good weapons. He's got good mobility to keep himself away from a bunch of violence happening in front of him. His offensive line was really good against the pass rush last year. He's got a really good defense that's going to get the ball back to him. He's got a cannon. His footwork looked pretty good. Maybe his decision-making costs him a pick that could have been thrown away, but that's going to be his entire career. I don't need Patrick Mahomes to start week one. That's not what I'm doing. But I'm not too worried about him being put in a game as the number two guy. Thank you to Charlie Carlin for running the show and for Rudy Salazar doing it for, like, I don't know, 5 minutes while Charlie was getting coffee or something. My name is Joshua Briscoe. I'm on Twitter at JB Briscoe. Hear me tomorrow through Friday, every day, over on ESPN Kansas City. It's almost entirely sports, 99.3, 1510 AM, 4 to 6. Got it. Nailed it. Woo! First try. Bye, Mom!
Hey, I'm Joshua Briscoe, host of Almost Entirely Sports on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 99.3 FM. Every weekday from 4 to 6, we talk about everything that we find interesting, from how Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce can revitalize the Chiefs' offense if Alex Smith will use them correctly, to how on earth Jerry Jones spent $16 million on a Hall of Fame party. Tune in to Almost Entirely Sports from 4 to 6 p.m. weekdays on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.